It's time for the Fringe Files.
For we are opposed around the world by a monolithic and ruthless conspiracy that relies primarily on covert means for expanding its sphere of influence, on infiltration instead of invasion, on subversion instead of elections, on intimidation instead of free choice, on guerrillas by night instead of armies by day.
So welcome back to the Fringe Files, and guess what? We're not going to do part three of The Creature from Jekyll Island. We're going to put it off one more time. I know I did this last time with a special episode, but in case you don't know, I host several different podcasts, and I co-host a podcast with a good friend of mine named Harold, and it's called Uncommon History, and we talk a lot about different history, U.S. history mainly. But this week we're actually talking about Edgar Cayce, who's a well-known psychic. He's from Western Kentucky. And what I'm going to do is I'm going to bring the clip over where we're discussing Edgar Cayce and play it on the Fringe Files tonight. At the end, I will let you know how to find the podcast, Uncommon History, if you're interested. Would love for you to come over and take a listen. I think you would enjoy it. So let's get into Edgar Cayce.
The second story we're going to do tonight, folks, is something totally different. Something I have no knowledge of, really, as far as I've never read about this guy a whole lot until I started reading about, looking at different things to do our podcast with. And our subject tonight, second subject, is Edgar Cayce, the Sleeping Prophet. Brian,
I'm familiar with him. Okay. Just, I mean, you know, it's kind of common, I guess, because he's from Kentucky.
Right.
And you know, I listen to a lot of podcasts, and I listen to a lot of those that are on the fringe, you know, like the Art Bell, like what he used to have. I uh-huh. love those type of podcasts. And he always comes up, you know, occasionally in those type podcasts and stuff. So I'm kind of familiar with what.
Well, I'm fascinated by things I don't know anything about, and it challenges us to think. And how much of this, I really, to be honest with you, I don't know what to believe. But when things happen and people witness it, and it's been documented over time, and even people may have seen things themselves, that it's not, you know, trickery or anything, it makes you think. I think there's a lot about our world we know so little about.
Yeah, and I think a lot of it is a con, too. I can't remember what was the guy that's always on Johnny Carson and different
shows. Kreskin, Amazing Kreskin.
You know, and he would debunk a lot of these guys. Mm-hmm. And, you know, it was common back then because, you know, people didn't understand things the way we do today.
Right.
And so I think it afforded them the ability to be able to pull the wool over a lot of people's eyes.
Right.
So, yes, I do believe there's a lot out there that we don't understand spiritually or, you know, in that realm
right.
that's not in the physical. So, yeah, I'm kind of, you know, some of it I'm like, yeah, I can believe, yeah, maybe that happened and maybe it didn't. So I'm not sold on it 100%.
Right. Well, born in 1877, Hopkinsville, Kentucky, he was Edgar was one of five children. His dad was a farmer and a businessman. He had an average upbringing. Wasn't anything different about him. There wasn't anyone around him that would have influenced him that we know of or he ever mentioned that would have led him down a path of this. He was a little different from the beginning. He had a free spirit. He was kind of an independent child. He played with imaginary playmates that they noticed at an early age. He had quite an imagination. He wasn't necessarily a really good in school. He wasn't real bright as far as, you know, probably just an average student.
Mm-hmm.
But he believed those playmates to be real. And now, as an adult, when they ask him about that, that he believed that they were spirits who were sent to frighten or threaten him.
Huh.
So that kind of wasn't expected answer that I would have thought that he would have said. When he lost his grandfather, I think his name was Tom, he spent a lot of time with him. We'll talk about that later. He'd moved to the farm and everything. But this grandfather, and I can relate to this because I was very close to my grandfather on my dad's side. And his name was Tom, by the way. And I spent a lot of time with him, and I enjoyed, and maybe that's where I enjoy doing stories and everything, because Papaw told a lot of that stuff. But you become really close to these people. And when he died, they found him in the barn talking to him and having a conversation. It's like he could see him and talk to him, and no one else could.
Yeah.
And this was when he was just a young boy at a very early age. Where did his powers come from? How did it happen? You know, where did this – there was a story of him, and I don't know exactly what age he was, but he was sitting on a board fence, and he accidentally fell off backwards, and he hit his head on a board that had a nail in it, and it punctured his cranium. And man, that had to hurt.
Oh, no.
Oh, my goodness. And they said after that, he became – it brought out his psychic abilities. Now, Edgar, he never claimed that. He said it came from God. But the family noticed a change in him after that accident. And now, he was raised in the Disciples of Christ Church, and at the age of 12, he had read the Bible 12 times. He wouldn't start reading when he was one, so he's had to read it through several times. He had a very amazing vision. He said he was visited by a female angel who asked him what he wanted most, and he responded to help others. So that became his life work, really. He really was a very compassionate man for other people, and we'll see this as we go through this story. He began to lose sleep. He was surprisingly, like I said, not a good student. He had difficulty with homework. But one of the amazing gifts that he had was that he would take, they said he was sitting at the table one night and trying to do his work, and he got tired, and he just laid the book down and fell asleep, and he laid his head across it. And when he woke up the next day, that he could recite every word in the book.
Wow.
And that earned him the name the Sleeping Prophet.
Yeah.
Okay, so that's kind of where that came from. He did a lot of work actually sleeping, but it mentally drained him at the same time. It's hard for us to understand. It's impossible for us to understand.
Yeah.
He left school at the age of 16 to help his grandparents, like I said, his uncle or his grandfather, Tom. But he didn't like farming. After a while, when things settled down for him, he got a job at a bookstore where he met his future wife, and her name was Gertrude. They eventually married, and Casey got into the insurance and the photography business. Now, there was an incident that really changed things for him. And maybe we would have not known who he was today if this hadn't happened. But on one of his insurance sales trips, Edgar lost his voice. He had a severe case of laryngitis, which lasted about 10 months.
Wow.
He had to quit his sales job because he couldn't talk.
Yeah.
But now he could still do the pictures, so he still took photos and worked with his wife to have a means of income. Now, there was this traveling hypnotist in that area of around Hopkinsville, Kentucky, and his name was Hart the Laugh King.
Huh.
Isn't that a strange name for a hypnotist?
Yeah.
I can see this guy coming riding into town with a painted wagon. You imagine what this looked like.
Wearing a cape and a top hat.
Yeah, yeah. Selling snake oil remedies.
Yeah.
But he actually he hypnotized Edgar, and he regained his voice temporarily. So was it a psychological reason his voice wouldn't return, or was it a physical reason? And then another local hypnotist by the name of A.L. Lane hypnotized him, and his voice returned for good. And that was in March of 1901. So this guy got interested in Casey. So when he hypnotized Casey, Casey took over the hypnosis and started healing the guy that had ailments that was put him under hypnosis.
Really?
So Lane, had a stomach disorder or something, and Casey helped him get over that as he helped Casey get over his laryngitis.
Huh.
Now, isn't that wild?
That's crazy.
So then the guy asked him, said to join him, and they would do this practice together, and Casey would read what was wrong with the guy and tell Lane how to treat it, and Lane would treat it and successfully treat people.
Huh.
But for some reason, that didn't work out. And so many of his ventures didn't. And we don't know fully why. We don't know. I don't really know the details of that. But his one of his first patients was a lady by the name of Amy Dietrich, excuse me, who had suffered from convulsions for 2 years.
Huh.
And Casey recommended an osteopathic therapy for the girl, which Lane was trained in. So they worked together. And Casey's notoriety from healing this girl just spread like wildfire. And so he began to get bombarded with people wanting him to to help them. In 1903, Gertrude and Edgar started a family, and they had children and operated a photography business in Bowling Green, Kentucky. His former partner, Lane, had started the Southern School of Osteopath Science in Franklin, Kentucky. So Edgar moved on, the other guy moved on, and they continued. Now, there was an incident in Bowling Green when Casey lived there that kind of changed him as well. The Bowling Green Literary Club, which had been in existence a long time, and there was a group of doctors and educated folks that were, I assume, to be like the Anaconda Club of Danville, Kentucky, had been around a long time.
Yeah.
And there was a doctor there by the name of Blackburn who persuaded Casey to give a public reading before the club in 1906. A handful of doctors wanted Casey himself to go into a trance, and they wanted to test him to see that if it was real or whatever reason.
Right, right.
So they pricked him with pins about his body and actually cut his nails on one of his forefingers just to see if he was aware of it. And upon awaking, he vowed to never be tested like that again.
Huh.
There was something about it that very much offended him.
Wow.
He severed any interest with the medical community for a long time because of that. He continued in his photography business, but he questioned himself, did God want him to heal people in the way that he'd been doing it?
Right.
In around 1909, several things happened in his life, misfortunes. There were two fires that destroyed his Bowling Green studio. His partner, who was with him in the venture, withdrew from the business. In 1911, Casey's second son died of whooping cough and colitis.
Hmm.
Casey blamed himself for not starting readings on the boy. He blamed himself totally for that.
Huh.
In Christmas 1911, Casey cured a local doctor by the name of Wesley Kitchum, and the doctor summoned Casey for many of his difficult patients. So in Bowling Green, this doctor had got an interest, and he realized that, you know, this guy's for real. He can actually help people.
Yeah.
So they started a psychic reading corporation, but the venture did not succeed. I can imagine that would be hard to do in that time, wouldn't you?
Yeah. Well, you know, you think if he's a psychic, he would be able to see that it wasn't going to work out to begin with.
From 1911 to 1923, Casey did both readings and photography work, and he conducted his readings. Now, this is interesting to me. Number one, he started out in a self-induced trance.
Okay.
And answered questions about patients' medical condition. So if you went to him, he would put himself in a trance and discuss your problems in that state.
While he was in that, okay.
Now, here's what's really wild, Brian. His patients didn't have to be in his presence for him to do that.
Really?
Yes.
Hmm.
He could do it by a distance.
So it was kind of like a remote viewing. He was able to do it from...
How can you explain that?
Yeah.
His readings were full of biblical phrases and metaphors that reference Christian beliefs. He would prescribe treatment, but the problem was a lot of the doctors didn't believe in him enough to carry out his treatments, which very much frustrated him.
Yeah.
So in 1923, he traveled to Dayton, Ohio, and gave some metaphysical readings there, and there was a guy there that had was impressed with him. And then things kind of start to change with him, the way he looked at things. He started talking about things more than physical ailments. He talking about mental problems and other issues that people had other than the physical ailment.
Yeah.
Psychological things that he tried to work with them on. He sold his photography business and was there was a wealthy businessman from New York by the name of Morton Blumenthal who opened the Edgar Casey Hospital in Virginia Beach, Virginia in 1928. And, you know, it wasn't a hospital of people like today that would be approved by the American Medical Association.
Right.
These were people that were outside of the mainstream medical community. But evidently it worked extremely well for a short time because people from all over the world poured in there.
Hmm.
The problem was that the Great Depression hit in 1930, and it doomed the business because people couldn't pay, although they needed the services, they couldn't pay for them. They couldn't financially make the hospital work from the way I understand what happened to it. A lot of times there at that hospital, he would prescribe strange cures for illnesses that people came to him, things like turpentine and kerosene.
Well, you know, I have seen, with the homeopathic stuff that I guess turpentine can cure a lot of different diseases. And basically, you know, in the conspiracy theory circle, you know, when the AMA come in and you had the homeopathic doctors and the doctors that were kind of funded by the big oil companies,
right?
When Rockefeller was taking over the American Medical Association, you know, there was a big split. And then all that stuff kind of got passed down. But I've known people say, well, when I was little, my grandmother, my great-grandmother would give me turpentine.
Yeah. Yeah, I can remember putting kerosene on wounds. My grandfather, I've seen him do it, and I did it because he did it, and he lived to be 95. And he really didn't die of anything. He just wore out, the doctor said.
Yeah.
So, obviously, you know, these folks, for whatever reason. But he also used a product called Jerusalem artichoke.
Never heard of it.
It was a source of insulin and all kinds of just – I could have went through a bunch of them, but I didn't want to waste everybody's time with that. But there was just several things that really, you know, he's like, really? You know? like I said, 1930, the Great Depression hit, and Casey's dreams had come to a close. At that age, you had to start all over again.
Oh, man.
You know, he didn't have a photography business. He didn't have anything. So in the Great Depression, he had to go back to Kentucky and start all over again. And it's just kind
of
tragic. But,
you know, I have a lot of respect for people like that.
Sure.
They get knocked down, and they pick themselves back up and start moving forward again.
And just to give you an idea how much this man did, it's mind-boggling. In 29 years, he conducted 14,000 psychic readings.
Wow.
And 900,000 documented transcribed text. That's almost a million.
Man.
He had to work all the time.
Yeah.
Now, you know, mentally draining, you can imagine the burden that he carried. In 1932... the Association for Research and Enlightenment, ARE, provided a safe house for some of Casey's transcripts, about 300,000 of them. So I think that's the organization still around today, so, you know, a person could go there and do that. Casey continued his work, and he was so besieged that he would schedule readings 2 years in advance.
Man.
Yeah, 2 years in advance. You had a waiting list to get to him. In 1944, he collapsed of exhaustion.
I can imagine.
He never recovered from it. And he died in 1945 at 68 years old.
Wow.
He is recognized as the father of holistic medicine by the American Medical Association to this day. If you like to do research and like to see his grave, he's buried in Riverside Cemetery in Hopkinsville, Kentucky. He died on January 7th, 1945, 68 years old.
Wow.
What a unique American.
If you think back through history of people you'd like to sit down across from and just interview or talk to, he would be one of them because.
Do you think he'd be hard to talk to?
You know, I don't know.
Well, think of yourself talking to him, and what would you? I mean, a guy like that, he's liable to tell you what you're going to say before you.
Yeah, yeah.
You know, I don't know. I mean, it would be intimidating to me to sit down with somebody that's that brilliant and on a level that I can't comprehend.
Yeah.
But he got into a lot of his psychic ability. He believed in a before life and an afterlife. And he believed that some of the illnesses that came to people in this life was because of an illness they had in a former life.
Hmm.
And I can't, that's on a level I don't understand.
Yeah, because, you know, I come at everything kind of from a biblical worldview. Mm-hmm. And, you know, that's where I have difficulty kind of buying into and believing.
Right, so, right. Yeah. A little statistic, though, 86% was his success rate.
Really? That's remarkable. That's high. There was definitely something there. Now, what it was, I don't know.
Right.
All right. Thank you for being part of Uncommon History Podcast. If you'd like to help support the podcast, please share our podcast with your friends. Leave a 5-star review and comments. This will help others find our podcast. And you can now find us on YouTube, Facebook, Instagram, and Twitter. We'll be back next week with a new episode.
All right. So that is a clip from Uncommon History, a podcast I co-host on Edgar Casey. So what does the Bible say? Because you heard me in the podcast say I come to everything from a biblical worldview. And Leviticus 19:31 says, "Do not turn to mediums or necromancers. Do not seek them out. And so make yourselves unclean by them. I am the Lord your God." So the Bible, you know, gives us strict instructions not to follow after them. So this is why I don't think anything that has to do with fortune tellers, psychics, is biblical. Well, when I say biblical, it's not something that God wants us to do. It's something he wants us to refrain from and stay away. So I hope you enjoyed the podcast. Join us next week, and hopefully, you know, we may even have up part 3 of The Creature from Jekyll Island. But join us as we continue to search for the cosmic truth.